Oh yay, oh yay, oh yay. All persons having business before the Honorable, the United States Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia Circuit are admonished to draw near and to give their attention, for the court is now sitting. God save the United States and its Honorable Court. Be seated, please. Case number 05-1327 et al. Southern California Edison Company Petitioner versus Federal Energy Regulatory Commission. Ms. Key for the petitioner, Mr. Kennedy for the respondent, and Mr. Parrish for the intervener.
Good morning. I'd like to save 5 minutes of my time for rebuttal. May it please the court. The issue before us here is not FERC's authority to approve a monthly netting period for sales of transmission to station power load. The issue before us is preemption. FERC has insisted that the state use a netting period to measure sales of retail energy to station loads and insists that it use a netting period that is consistent with the monthly netting period that FERC has approved for use to measure transmission sales to station power loads. And FERC is insisting on consistency by the state, even though FERC itself has approved inconsistent netting periods for sales of various products and services to the same station power.
Counsel, are you aware of our rules that discourage counsel from reading their argument?
Yes. I'm sorry if I was reading a little bit too much.
Just talk to us.
The fact that FERC has approved inconsistent netting periods for sales of various products and services to station power loads demonstrates why this case should be controlled by the Supreme Court's precedent in Louisiana PFC, the FCC, which stands for the proposition that where there is no conflict between real-world facts, but only conflicts between fictions or policies applied to facts, that there's no grounds for a federal agency to preempt the state.
But can I just ask, you guys use preemption as your template. FERC really doesn't even talk about preemption. Do you need to focus this as a preemption case? So I thought maybe the core of your argument is this is a retail sale, right? So it doesn't matter whether it's consistent or inconsistent. It's a retail sale. It's outside of their jurisdiction. Why isn't that your argument rather than some argument about they have to preempt?
Well, we have made that argument as well. We have made the argument that New York v. FERC stands for the proposition that when transmission and retail energy are unbundled from one another, that of course they are entirely separate products and services. And that was the first point we made on our brief, that as separate products and services, each commission can regulate as it sees fit. But here, FERC has insisted that it can use its transmission jurisdiction somehow to trump the state's jurisdiction over retail sales, which it clearly has jurisdiction over. We repeatedly asked FERC for an explanation of why it had this authority, and basically the answer was because we say we do and because this court in Niagara said we had that authority. Well, and we don't think those are good enough reasons.
Your only argument is because we say we do, you probably win and we don't need to discuss preemption, right?
I would agree with that, you know, FERC just has no authority to regulate retail sales of energy, and thus it has no business setting the netting period. There's no question that setting a netting period is a form of regulation.
Yeah, that's pretty much the case, isn't it?
What?
That's pretty much the case, isn't it?
We think that is
the case. We agree with your answer to that question. Case is over. Right? You win.
Yes.
So the preemption question is, that even if it is retail sales, if somehow their ability to control transmission requires a consistent rule, then they would preempt. Is that? I appreciate you disagree with that, but is that the nature of their what
My
you think
understanding of their position is that there must be consistency between the amount of transmission service they say was provided over a certain period, as with the amount of power the state says was provided over a certain period or sold over a certain period. But we find that ironic given the fact that FERC itself, as to these very same station power loads, is saying over the course of a month, for example, these station power loads did not buy any transmission, but they did have to buy various transmission-related services called ancillary services because, in fact, the California ISO rules net those services over the course of an hour instead of netting those over the course of the month. So FERC itself has allowed inconsistent netting periods for various products being sold to station power loads. And even more ironically, we have a situation here where the energy sold to these station power loads that FERC insists be netted monthly, well, the generation these generators that are associated with the loads are producing is actually measured hourly or netted hourly as well. So there's blatantly inconsistent netting periods for energy to when station power loads are involved. But FERC, again, has not taken issue with the conflict that it's creating by setting a monthly netting period for retail sales and an hourly netting period for wholesale sales.
Of course, if somehow or other FERC were to conclude this was connected to their wholesale sale jurisdiction, then you would have a separate problem. But they haven't asserted that either.
I do believe this case would be different if they had relied on their wholesale jurisdiction, but I think then my client would go back and look at the preemption analysis, and because these are all purely accounting fictions, even if the same product is involved, I'm not sure there's a conflict. Turning back to Louisiana PSC v. FCC.
Your argument is better than that. You're sure there is no conflict, isn't it?
Well, I'm sure there's no conflict based on the facts here. Here, FERC has allowed a wholly different netting period for energy, for retail, and for wholesale. For them to go back and rely on their wholesale authority and insist that the retail energy netting period be one and the same with the wholesale netting period, well, then they'd have to explain away their position in this case, where they have no problem with the wholesale and retail energy netting periods being different from one another. So while there's some facial appeal to having consistency when one product is involved, because of cases like Louisiana PSC, there you were looking at one piece of telephone equipment. The FCC might have said it has zero useful life remaining. The state may have said that same piece of equipment has 10 years of useful life remaining. How many useful years it had remaining, who knows? It could have had 5, 10, 15. These are all just accounting fictions for rate-making purposes, and there's no reason they need to be consistent with one another.
You suggest the underlying policy purpose FERC is driving at is to try to equalize the competition between energy generators and integrated utilities that are both transmitting and energy generating. Is that correct?
Yes. FERC has based its policy in part on claiming that otherwise there might be undue discrimination between entities like my client that are integrated utilities and merchant generators. But even if there is undue discrimination, and I will not concede that, that is for the state to remedy on the energy side. FERC has remedied the situation on the transmission side. It has the right to remedy the situation by regulating transmission. What FERC does not have the right to do is remedy undue discrimination by regulating in a sphere that Congress didn't give it authority to regulate.
Just out of curiosity, in the California market, how many, it wasn't true in the New York market, there was virtually no generation still being performed by the utilities. That's not true in the California market?
The California integrated utilities still own a fair amount of generation. I believe they divested a little more than half of their generation when they divested.
So that competitive problem is a serious problem for FERC?
Well, I don't think it's a serious problem for this reason. In California, merchant generators compete with generators located all over the western United States. In the other western United States, there are no ISOs, and those generators are all subject to paying for station power at retail, probably based on netting periods around 15 minutes or 1 hour that the other states use. FERC has no problem with the competition from generators from all those states also having the same alleged disadvantage. Also, the station power protocol is voluntary. To date, only a very few generators have signed up for it, so there's many generators that are still subject to the state's netting rules and are competing, and there doesn't seem to be any problem.
What do you say to the argument presented by FERC to the effect that Niagara could not have relied on the concession made by petitioner's counsel because it would be impossible for the court to accept a jurisdictional determination that was by consent of the parties rather than an independent examination.
Well, I do agree generally with the proposition that an agency can't get jurisdiction by consent, but I don't believe there was a consent to jurisdiction in that case because we know FERC does not have jurisdiction over retail energy sales. The concession I saw in Niagara Mohawk was a concession that the two netting periods for energy and transmission had to be one and the same. That is, the issue of preemption was conceded, and I don't believe there's any case law that says that preemption can't be conceded. As well, jurisdictional arguments can be waived, and certainly a preemption argument can be waived.
The difference, wouldn't you say the difference is in our case law is between an agreement before the agency on the one hand, which cannot confer jurisdiction, and a separate issue as to what the situation is on appeal and before the Court of Appeals?
Yes,
as to what arguments are waived or conceded?
Well, I do believe the jurisdictional arguments can be waived or conceded, and I also believe—
Not our jurisdiction.
What?
Not our jurisdiction.
No, not your jurisdiction. I believe a petitioner can waive a jurisdictional argument by not raising it in the case below.
As to agency jurisdiction.
As to agency jurisdiction, not as to your jurisdiction.
On transmission, do you concede or agree that once station power is injected into the grid, they have FERC has a reasonable argument this is interstate transmission and they can regulate the transmission element?
Well, just to clarify, station power is considered a load, so it's something that consumes energy off the grid. These generators, when they generate power, they do inject power into the grid. That's not station power, and that power is transmitted in interstate commerce. But, of course, that power they're producing and transmitting in interstate commerce, that power is measured on an hourly basis, not a monthly basis. But station power is not a term for a form of load.
So the netting that they do with respect to station power between what they inject into the grid and what they take from the grid, be a little more specific about that. Is your dispute only about retail sales and not about transmission?
We have no dispute with FERC using whatever netting period it would like to determine whether a transmission sale occurred.
Right.
We're fine with them using a month, a year, as long as they don't use that netting period to preempt the state authority to determine whether there was a retail sale of energy.
Okay. Now, what about that question? I take it FERC's principal argument is there's no sale here at all. Why don't they have jurisdiction to decide that question?
They do not have jurisdiction to decide whether a retail sale occurs because they simply do not have jurisdiction over retail sales. They certainly have jurisdiction to delineate a wholesale.
Right. In order to decide whether this is outside their jurisdiction, don't they have jurisdiction to decide where the boundary is?
They have jurisdiction to decide the boundary between a wholesale sale, which they would regulate, and a retail sale, which they don't regulate. And in delineating between a wholesale and a retail sale, they could need to draw a line. But that, importantly, is not what they've done here. They said the wholesale and retail energy netting periods can be completely different. Here they're drawing a line between a retail sale and self-supply, yet they have jurisdiction over neither retail sales nor self-supply. And that point about not having jurisdiction over self-supply raises the second major issue that we've raised, is that they've claimed the right to preempt the state from regulating the service of state self-supply, but have no grounds for preemption because they themselves have no authority to regulate self-supply. Here, the state of California has seen fit to give the state commission, the California Public Utility Commission, the right to regulate the self-supply of energy and impose charges that the state sees fit. And FERC, again, they rely on undue discrimination and arguments like that, but they simply do not have the authority to remedy undue discrimination where they have no congressional mandate to act.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
We'll hear from the respondent.
Mr. May it please the Court, I am Robert Kennedy on behalf of the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission. The station power protocols at issue in this case carry forward to the current marketplace the historical practice employed by vertically integrated utilities of netting their generator station power requirements against their gross output. And what it does, in effect, is create an alternative means of supply for merchant generators in an effort to foster a more competitive marketplace. And the Commission's approval of the station power protocol should be upheld because it's a valid exercise of its jurisdiction over the interstate transmission of electricity. As this Court knows, Section 201B of the Federal Power Act vests the Commission with plenary authority over the interstate transmission of electricity. And as the Commission explained in the orders under review here, the netting formula in the station power protocols set forth a formula for determining when and how much transmission service is taken by a merchant generator in connection with the station power needs, and also when and how much FERC jurisdictional rates can be charged in connection with this transaction.
Why does this relate to transmission?
The station power protocols determine two things. One, it determines the generator's net output, because self-supplied station power is netted against the gross output, so it determines how much energy is injected into the grid for resale by those merchant generators. And it also determines...
Wait a minute. You're not worried about resale. You're not even relying on wholesale.
Correct. We're not worried. But in
I want to know why it relates to transmission, which council argues is a whole separate market than energy.
Well, it relates to transmission because, as I said, it determines the generator's net output, how much it injects into the grid, and on that basis, the California ISO's tariff imposes transmission charges. Conversely, it also determines the transmission requirements for station power. It determines if you're net negative for a month, you have taken...
But there's no dispute over your calculation of transmission charges.
Right. I thought your question was how this relates to...
It is, and we're not getting an answer.
Maybe I don't understand what this is in your question. How does determining whether...
We do not understand why the market for transmission charges, which you have an absolute right to regulate, has any bearing on what is at stake in this case.
Well, the netting for station power.
You need to determine whether or not there's a sale in connection with the self-supply, because as the Commission said in the Nine Mile orders, which were at issue in the Niagara Mohawk cases, there needs to be consistency between transmission and electricity. Certainly, we don't dispute that they could be subject.
Wait a minute. You have differences even with respect to that, don't you, in California?
Well, in California, with respect to certain wholesale sales are priced hourly. Ancillary services are priced hourly.
How about energy?
Well, energy is also priced hourly, but in terms of station power, that's looked at monthly.
I know. So where's the consistency?
Well, you need all those will give you the same answer. What you need is when there is transmission, you also need, when there is electricity, when there's a sale, you also need transmission to go with it. The problem here, the petitioners in their briefs and here today say, well, why can't these two regimes work in tandem? Well, the Commission explained in both this order and in the orders at issue in New York that simply won't work, because the federal government and the state governments are looking at the same thing, the generator's net output.
I want you to explain why it won't work.
Well, it won't work because, as the Commission said in paragraph 76 of the tariff rehearing order, essentially allowing a shorter state netting interval to work in the background would effectively gut the station power protocols, because itself a generator who...
Yeah, I know. It would gut the protocols, but the question of the protocol, whether the protocols are legal.
Yeah. You've got to make that jurisdictional for you before that becomes convincing. Well, it's all right to gut it if you don't have jurisdiction.
Correct. But I'm not even sure I would concede that point. The reason the Commission, as Judge Garland noted in his questions to petitioners, the Commission, cases such as New York v. FERC and Southern Cal and Edison versus FPC, stand for the principle that the Commission can look at a transaction in the first instance and make a call as to whether federal jurisdictional services being provided or state jurisdictional services are being provided.
I think Judge Garland's question was with respect to either a wholesale or retail sale. Certainly, FERC may have jurisdiction to determine that boundary, or between a retail sale and a transmission, if there were tension there. But we can't see where the tension is. We're having difficulty.
Well, the tension is that you would have under, there would be circumstances if both tariffs worked in tandem, that A, there would be, the merchant generator would not be charged for any transmission, but the state would be saying, well, you actually bought energy. And second...
So what's wrong? What's wrong with that?
Well, as a, again, you need, as a physical matter, you need transmission. For station power to work, for the lights to go on, you need the commodity and the transmission to work in tandem. So it just doesn't comport with
the
physical reality.
Why did the, these are two different, you have unbundled these products.
Right.
Why cannot they be priced separately?
Right.
They can certainly be priced separately, but it just doesn't comport with physical reality to say you bought energy, but it was never transmitted.
I sat here for a whole day listening to FERC and others explain to me under 888 why it was that these should be unbundled, and you convinced us. Now that they're unbundled, you're coming back in telling us, well, we have to regulate both of them because if you have one, you have to have
No, we're not. We're not regulating.
You're not a master of consistency. Your agency is not a master of consistency.
We're not regulating. In defining whether or not a retail sale takes place, that doesn't mean we're regulating it. We are saying when there is, in fact, a retail sale, that's for the states to regulate. They can determine the rates that are be charged and anything else that goes along with it.
Is this just a sort of a problem of it doesn't sound good if they're not consistent? The way you put it is, well, FERC thinks there's no transmission here because of the netting. The state nonetheless thinks there's a sale. And gee, that sounds odd to have a sale without transmission.
Well,
but is that just it sounds odd? Is
no,
there
also
is there some sense in which the system will come crashing down and the lights won't go on if you have a different definition for the
there,
two?
There is the economic problem that if a generator is net positive, say it uses 5 megawatts of station power over the course of a month, but it generates well in excess of that. Mm-hmm. It's net positive under the California ISO's tariff. It incurs no charges. But it incurs no charges on the tariff, but it's incurred the cost of generating that 5 megawatts. It's lost the opportunity to sell it in wholesale because it's not treated as part of its net output. And then the state comes along underneath and charges them again because it'll capture those 5 megawatts. So they'll be they'll incur the cost of generating, lose the cost of selling it.
So no matter what the netting period is, it's possible for that to occur, isn't it?
It's possible for that to occur if they're not in synchronicity. So the issue is not 1 hour versus 1 month. It's the need for the identical time period, the identical netting period between the federal...
But if you're net positive, you're going to owe something. Is that not correct? I mean, there'll be a charge incurred if you're net positive.
If you're net positive...
If you're net negative, there'd be a charge the other
correct.
Way.
Correct. And if that can't be satisfied by remote self-supply, then that's an issue for the state to regulate. What the commission has done here, it's looked at...
What I'm coming back to is, why is what you described as the horrible thing that's going to happen such a horrible thing?
Well, it would effectively gut the program that the commission has set up in an effort to create a more competitive marketplace. And if you look at cases
you,
like...
Okay, hold on for 1 second. Before we look at cases, I just want to be sure I understand this. So the problem with the inconsistency is that FERC treating this as a net... means that FERC, one, says there's no transmission, and therefore FERC won't allow it to be regarded as a wholesale sale, while the state is charging them...
A retail sale.
Well, but FERC doesn't have control over that. You just said that they weren't allowed to charge for the net positive that they injected into the system. Is that right?
That would be the conflict. They would be charging.
That's what I'm trying to find out, what the conflict is. But that's because FERC won't allow them to charge for that. Right?
Well,
because FERC regards it as a netting and won't allow it to be charged. What you're saying is, on the other side, they're getting charged by the state for the retail. That's the inconsistency.
Correct.
Is that stated in the FERC order?
Yeah, if you look at paragraph 76.
Give us a JA page when you do these things.
Yes, I believe it's JA 70. It's paragraph 76 of the tariff rehearing order, which is the fourth in the series of orders. Let me just make sure I gave you the right JA site.
That's the right page. It's 70.
JA 70, paragraph 76.
Wait, JA 70? Okay, sorry. Okay.
And then paragraph 76, it talks about how having cites to the AES Somerset case, which is one in the series at issue in Niagara Mohawk.
Can you tell me which sentence you're talking about? These are kind of dense, so.
The first sentence in paragraph 78, and it says a state retail tariff that impairs the ability of the merchant generator to.
Wait. Hold on. Paragraph 78?
76, I'm sorry.
Okay. As we noted in AES Somerset, that sentence?
Correct.
Impairs the ability of the merchant.
The conflict we were talking about.
Maybe you can get that out of that sentence, but that sentence doesn't say what you said in oral argument.
The conflict that we were discussing is crystallized in the second sentence here, where it says the retail tariff that CPUC seeks to impose on merchant generators has the same effect.
No, it just says it forces merchant generators to pay load-based charges for fictitious energy purchases.
Correct.
Right. Well, but whether they're fictitious or not depends on, you know, whether your netting theory is correct. You just stated an explanation that sounds like a possible explanation, but it's not. I don't see it anywhere in FERC's order. That can be very bad for you in a sense that because of Chenery we can't uphold. On the other hand, it might be good for you because it gives you the possibility of a remand. Well, but I don't see in here that argument you're making.
Well, I guess which piece of the argument?
The argument that under FERC's situation, under the regulation that FERC provides, if there's no transmission, there's also no wholesale sale. So they lose that part of the ability to claim a wholesale sale for the part they use.
Correct.
On the other hand, the state is going to allow a retail sale, and that puts the non-integrated generators in an unfair position. Right? That's
right.
Your argument. Well, that's not stated in that sentence, unless the word fictitious stands for any argument, you know, that you can think of.
No, what they're saying is, again, at the end of that month, that net generator has taken. What they mean by fictitious is they've held back that 5 megawatts to satisfy their own station power needs. They haven't bought anything, but then you have the state coming along behind and saying, no, in fact,
I understand the argument you're making. I'm just asking. I don't see that.
I'm not even sure I understand. Is your argument that FERC's ability to charge for transmission is somehow affected by what the state has done?
Well, they would both calculate.
No. The question is FERC's ability to regulate transmission affected by petitioner's position?
The two calculations would result in different net outcomes.
That's not the same thing. The fact that they're different net outcomes does not mean it impairs FERC's ability to charge for transmission, does it?
Well, it wouldn't necessarily.
If
it could still impose transmission charges.
Yeah,
there would be a
breakdown. If CAISO were not doing exactly what it's doing, if they were doing something different, FERC would still be coming out the same way, wouldn't it?
But it would impair.
Would still be coming out the same way, would it not?
Could FERC, to take off on Judge Santel's question, could FERC take the position that there was a transmission here when the generator uses station power?
Well, it does. If it's remotely self-supplied,
right?
Then it does.
What about if it's self-supplied?
If it's self-supplied on-site, it's deemed with the station power piece that there is no transmission. You just
right. So you can't rely on transmission.
But that is backed out. If you look at JA, I believe it's 200, which is the definition, which discusses the manner in which the California ISO's tariff imposes transmission charges. What it says is that's going to be based on gross load, the gross output, what you inject into the system. And backed out of that figure is what you use on site for station power. So there is interplay there. It works on both sides of the equation.
FERC hasn't made that clear. Now, the next question I have is, why can't the state authorize a consumption charge here? I won't use tax, consumption charge.
Well, that's not certainly as the commission made clear in these orders. If California wanted to impose a consumption tax,
and it comes to consumption charge.
Correct, a charge based on retail services.
No, consumption.
Based on services, what they're measuring is.
In other words, suppose California says, "Look, we don't care whether this is a retail sale or not; it's consumption, and therefore, as consumption, it's like a." consumption tax that states use rather than a retail sales tax. So we're going to charge a consumption charge here. Is there any problem there?
No, I mean, the commission said, the commission's bottom line is that...
Yes, there's still a problem because you don't like the competition problem.
No, no. What the commission is saying here is when these generators are self-supplying, they are only taking service under the California ISO's tariff, and only those charges may be applied. While we've carved out a limited exception in Order 888,
All right, this is a theoretical question. If there's a charge here for consumption imposed on the generators, if the ISO put that forward, do you have any difficulty with that?
As a theoretical matter, no. I don't think the commission would have a problem with
that's an interesting concession, isn't
but,
it?
But what they're
I hate
doing
to
here?
Mention concessions.
Yeah, that word should like.
I revoke it all.
Put your hair on it.
But what the commission found is being done here. It's imposing a charge based on.
So if it's your problem,
from Edison.
If the ISO authorized a tariff imposed on based on consumption, that would be all right. But because they call it their authority under retail sales, that's not all right. That's a distinction without a difference.
I don't believe so, because had there been a tax, and certainly I think it's telling that California is not here arguing that this is a tax. If you look at the...
No, we're not talking about tax. It's a consumption charge.
Based on services provided by Edison.
That's
what they're looking at. And what the commission is saying is under the station power protocols...
No, we're just going to charge people for consuming energy. We want to reduce energy.
That's fine as a theoretical matter, but what the commission is saying is you are not consuming any energy provided by Edison in connection with your self-supplying
on-site. Now you're saying FERC can make a judgment as to whether someone is consuming energy.
Well, the commission has, in these orders, has found there's a distinction between consuming energy and purchasing it. Just like these on-site generators are consuming energy, but they're not purchasing it.
I had a case.
They generate themselves and using it. So there is some sense of regulating consumption in that aspect. What the commission is saying here is that these merchant generators, when they're self-supplying, are not taking any services under a state retail tariff. They're only taking service under the California ISO's tariff, and only those charges may be applied.
And since the word concession came up, I sort of hate to ask this with Judge Silverman sitting here, but I'm going to anyway, since he didn't. I don't really understand your argument that Niagara Mohawk did not base its jurisdictional ruling on the party's concession. You seem to be saying that they shouldn't have, but that doesn't seem to be.
Well, as
petitioner's statutory argument, I'm reading from Niagara Mohawk, is not insubstantial. The commission's jurisdictional rationale is a bit confusing. It insists that no sale of any kind takes place when the generator takes power from the grid for station power service, so long as it's netting positive is for the month. Then later it says, the commission does have undoubted jurisdiction over interstate transmission, the grid, and the generators at issue in the case take station power directly from the grid, but it has not clearly articulated why that jurisdiction permits it to determine that no sale of any kind, including a retail sale, takes place when the generator takes station power from the grid. The difficulty we see in petitioner's jurisdictional argument, however, is their clear concession that an hourly rating netting tariff would not violate the Act and so forth. I don't read any language in there that bases a jurisdictional holding on anything but the concession. Do you?
Well, I think...
Can you find anything in the case that does?
I think the next sentence is essentially characterizing the petitioner's concession as one of fact, that you need some accommodation here, and then...
Read me the part where Niagara Mohawk panel bases jurisdiction on anything other than the concession.
Well, I believe the next clause in the sentence you're reading, which is a recognition that in drawing the jurisdictional lines in this area, some practical accommodation is necessary, that characterizing the concession as one of fact, and then the court went on to find that it's the commission, as the Supreme Court found in Niagara Mohawk and in New York v. FERC, that the commission is entitled to go first. Someone has to go first in regulating these and identifying what's going on, And it's the commission who does that. And the fact that it defines when state jurisdictional service occurs does not mean that it's overstepping its bounds and regulating.
We've let you go well beyond your allocated time. Right.
One question was the way I started with your opposing counsel. They formulate this as an argument about preemption. They say in their brief, and I think with some justice, that you don't really address this as a preemption case, but as a case about the proper scope of the federal authority. But the thrust of the response you gave to me, which is that we can't have a system where we have different intervals because it would be inconsistent and it would have an anti-competitive effect contrary to what FERC's trying to do overall, that really is a preemption argument, isn't it?
Well, I think to answer your question, I think the arguments have sharpened over time. And I think
how sharp are they now?
Pretty pointy.
Yeah.
If you look at the arguments that were made to the commission below, it was a lot of where do you get your authority to determine this? As I said, it's the issues have narrowed over time. And on the consistency point, I mean, you have to consider this is the end. These orders represent the end of 15 some odd orders on this topic by the commission, and it would we talked a little bit about paragraph 76. It cites to the ASE Somerset case, which again, if you look at that at paragraph 30 in that decision, it again talks about the conflict that arises between the state and federal.
So what you're saying is that below this seemed more like about the scope, but as it's gotten sharper, it looks more like preemption argument about consistency, and maybe that explains why the commission wasn't quite as sharp as it should have been in the order?
I'm not sure it's a distinction with if it's more than a matter of semantics. I mean,
it's a matter of semantics in this sense. If you could simply say there is no sale here and that's good enough, regardless of whether it's inconsistent or not, if you had jurisdiction to say there is no sale and therefore there can't be retail sale, this wouldn't be a preemption argument, this would be only an argument about scope.
Correct.
If your ability to say there's no sale here really rests on the problem of consistency between there being a sale as far as the state's concerned and no sale as far as FERC's concerned, and that inconsistency makes federal regulation impossible or difficult or destroys the scope of federal jurisdiction over things it actually has jurisdiction, that's preemption. You're nodding. I just want to be sure you agree with that.
I do. As we said in our briefs, we think the case law stands for the proposition that the commission can draw these jurisdictional lines. In the first instance, the scope issue.
And if I may add a third point, if in fact your preemption argument is based not on any practical difficulties with pricing the different commodities or different services differently, but rather on your perception of the competitive situation in California between integrated utilities and generators, even though that gets into the retail sales area, then you've got more of a problem, don't you?
In what sense?
You don't have the general authority under the statute to simply equalize the competitive position of generators and integrated utilities, regardless of whether that competitive imbalance arises out of retail sales.
Well, to the extent it relates to transmission.
Yes.
We do.
If my aunt had wheels, she'd be a trolley car.
as discussed in some of those New York orders.
Mr. Kennedy is suggesting there's a greater chance that he wins his argument that then your aunt has wheels.
Well, only you said if it is.
I don't know your aunt.
I'm only relating to his suggestion that if he could figure a way to connect it to transmission.
Well, no, I think
he's making a counterfact, which presumably is also true of Judge Silberman's aunt.
Right.
I won't touch that, but I will say just very briefly that the issue was never really raised in New York, in California, that there's not a competitive problem.
I think that was a Freudian slip. You're right. It wasn't raised in New York.
No, it was discussed in New York in the PJM orders. In those orders, the commission explained.
This is a dramatic example of how litigation strategy can have an enormous impact.
Well, I'm not sure I understand that.
Yeah, I think you do.
The comment. Okay. Okay. Well, if there's no further questions.
No further questions, then we will hear from the intervener. Good morning, counsel.
Morning, Your Honors. Ashley Parrish for the interveners. If I may address three points, I'd like to clarify all these questions. I'd like to start off by focusing you on the right preemption cases that deal with FERC, not the wrong preemption cases. Then I want to turn second to Judge Silberman, your key question, which is why there's a conflict here. And Judge Garland, it picks up on your point because you've got it exactly right, but I think I can crystallize this better than what FERC just did. And then I last want to explain to you why once you find out that there is a conflict and you accept that, if you do accept that, then Judge Garland, your concerns about a reasoned explanation don't come into play. And let me explain to you why that's the case, but it ties back to focusing on the right preemption cases. So the right preemption cases you should be focusing on here as a way of analogy are the Supreme Court's three cases in the Nantahala line of cases. And we cite those in a brief. The reason they're relevant, this is Nantahala, this is the Mississippi Power and Light, and then it's Entergy. What happens in those cases is that FERC, using its authority for wholesale sales, makes an allocation of costs. It has no regulatory authority over costs in general.
But the problem was they didn't rely on their determination of wholesale sales.
Absolutely, Your Honor. But just as a principle, the transmission is the same as sales in the sense that what happened in that case, FERC exercises authority over costs in order to use its authority over wholesale sales. As a result of that cost allocation, the state has to respect that so that it doesn't mess it up with the retail sales. Now, that takes me to my point as to why there's a conflict with transmission, and that's what I really need to get to. But I want you to look at those three cases, if you would, Your Honors. In terms of why there's a conflict, let me use the analogy. It's not realistic, but it makes the point. You have a generator that's for 31 days in a month, spends 30 days using station power, keeping the lights on. Each day it uses one unit. At the end of the 30 days, it's used 30 units up. On the 31st day, it turns all its lights off and it pumps out 130 units of energy onto the grid. The way that FERC is looking at this, it says what we need to do is figure out how much energy is now being used in transmission. And the reason for that is two things. One is they have to know how transmission charges work. But even though they're not exercising their wholesale authority to regulate this, they're tied. They have to know how much energy is on the grid because that's the energy that's ultimately used by generators for wholesale sales.
Wait a minute. Is it, then this is based on their wholesale sales jurisdiction, not on their transmission?
It's based on their authority to regulate transmission, but all I'm saying is you can't separate them out so distinctly in the sense that even if they're not exercising
But they price them separately.
But that's exactly right, Your Honor. But the reason is, and maybe if I can just finish the analogy, but they're connected in the sense that the point of transmitting in this case is to transmit for wholesale sale. The FERC's authority is over the transmission, but there's a practical reason why that's the case. But let me finish the analogy that what ends up happening is that under the California way of doing this, they would say those 30 units of energy all have to be purchased by the generator. So the mismatch is that the generator is only getting credit for 100 units that are now being thrown out onto the system. And there's 30 units that doesn't get any credit for at all. This is the type of trapping of cost that was talked about by the Supreme Court. What's happened is you've now got 30 units of energy that's being trapped. It's not available for transmission, and hence the generator can't make that ultimately available for the sale.
Can I ask you the same question I asked FERC attorney, which is which paragraph of the order says what you just said?
Your Honor, there isn't a paragraph that says it clearly. I think.
So then I'm not wrong when I say there's a problem of explanation, or at least where I ask the question of whether there's a problem.
Your Honor, what I would say is that you're wrong is that I think this whole case relates to the question of jurisdiction. And again, I turn back to the Supreme Court cases. What happens in those cases, there's no explanation by FERC at all. In fact, they didn't even address the issue. And the reason is in the preemption.
The explanation you just gave us. Speed talking. It's all right. I speed listen. It's not a problem.
Okay.
I talk faster than you probably.
I don't.
That's actually true. You have to find a compromise between the two of us. If it's important, if it was relevant for you starting your argument, and I think it was, why is it not important that it's not in the order?
Yeah, let me explain this to you, Your Honor, because I think if you take a look again at the Supreme Court cases, what they say is in the FERC context, unlike the FCC or the FDA context, there's because of the filed rate doctrine and other things, there's a matching up between jurisdiction. You can't have overlapping jurisdiction in many of these cases. And so what ends up happening is that these cases are fought on jurisdictional grounds on the theory that FERC can't exercise any jurisdiction at all. Once you find that there is jurisdiction, then the burden to argue preemption becomes easy. And that's what happens in the Nantahala cases. You don't have to look at whether there's a conflict or an explanation, because FERC, by exercising jurisdiction, closes the gap. The whole point of the Federal Power Act was to eliminate any gaps in regulation and to clearly define whether it's state regulation or federal regulation. When the federal, in this case, the agency is legitimately exercising jurisdiction, which opposing counsel concedes, they are allowed to set a netting period for purposes of transmission, then any conflict that the court can imagine, any reasonable conflict that it can discern from the commission's orders, and we think that you can discern the
path.
What's
the conflict?
Yeah.
What's the conflict that we can imagine?
The conflict is, Your Honor, very simply, is that as a generator, we have power that we need to transmit across the system to eventually sail. If the state can do this, what it can do is it can trap our energy that we lose. It's like a regulatory taking.
It's not trapping energy now, though. It's charging for energy based on a monthly netting in station power. It's not physically, you can transmit everything you could transmit before, right?
No, Your Honor, what happens is that the FERC will only recognize the 100 units. The 30 units the FERC won't recognize, so we don't have that. And at the same time, the state is saying, you don't get that 30 as a credit. So what ends up happening is it does get trapped in the sense we no longer have it available to transmit for sale. It just goes out on the system and we lose it.
So, I mean, one question you might answer is, why can't FERC let you charge for those? FERC's answer before was, well, it seems weird to have charges for sales without transmission, but... So what
we're
if it's weird?
We're not seeing how the state is preventing FERC from doing precisely what FERC intends to do. I mean, what you want FERC to do.
But I guess, but just to go further, I guess
you
could
argue. I'm still not sure I understand before we go any further. You say FERC could take the position of charging for what?
What FERC says is that on the 130 gross output, it is only through its netting rules, it's giving us credit for 100 units that are being put onto the grid and then can be then available for sale. It says the other 30 have to be allocated towards station power. What the state is saying is we are not recognizing that 30, and essentially then 30 units of our generation.
We're not recognizing that 30.
Yeah,
I don't understand that phrase.
Well, what that 30, instead of us using that for station power, the energy that we generate, we are now being required to buy that 30 units from somebody else. So we are stuck in a regular...
No. They're charging you for using it yourself.
Yeah.
But Your Honor, assuming that we didn't generate...
Why is that trapped? What do you mean by trapped?
Because if we put a gross output of 130 units onto the grid,
right,
we can sell that at wholesale, we can transmit it, and we can get credit for it. If we have only 100 units and the 30 units by FERC is being deemed to be used for station power, we only have 100 that can be used on the grid.
Yes.
But that 30 that FERC has now said is not available for transmission, the state has said that doesn't count for station power. You have to buy station power separately as if you're buying it from somebody else.
Or we charge you for using it.
Well, but they're not charging us for using it from ourselves. They're assuming that we're purchasing it from Southern California Edison.
Sort of like Wickard Filburn, right?
What you're saying is you don't – there. Another company, California, is the one who's going to get paid for this.
And we pay
it's for not it. A tax on your consumption. It's something you have to pay to your competitor.
Exactly, and that's why FERC's worried about this.
So this all sounds very good, but I can't see it anywhere in the.
If you take a look at the Nantahala Mississippi Light and then Entergy.
Wait a minute. Let's even assume you have to pay your competitor. So what?
So
Judge Garland brings that is the underlying competitive reason, which is why FERC
that's
is doing what it's doing. But so what?
Why
can't California charge the energy generator an unfair amount compared to the integrated utility?
It's not the fact that they're charging an unfair amount. It's the fact that we have energy that we should be able to sell ourselves and move in transmission that we're not being allowed to do it. And it's the same that's going on with trapped costs. In that case, what the Supreme Court said is you could have a retail rates based on a different cost allocation. Why can't the state do that? Because it's regulating retail rates. It can come up with a different way of looking at the cost allocation. And what the Supreme Court has said is no, you can't do that.
Well, a different rate of cost allocation, which would have a conflict between wholesale and retail is one situation. But now you're making a separate, entirely separate kind of argument,
And, of course, as Judge Garland points out, there's not a shred of indication of this in the FERC order.
Well, I would underscore, Your Honors, in the Entergy case, the FERC did not even address it at all. It was an issue that was, and the court said it doesn't matter because preemption is something for the court to decide. And the logic of the fact that you can only have one regulator, because the whole point of the Federal Power Act is to...
You deal with the Chenery problem, though, that we're not supposed to affirm agencies on bases other than what the agency has asserted.
And, Your Honor, that's the point about how this case has been presented, in the sense that the agency was challenged on its jurisdiction. You've now been in this court, and the other side has conceded jurisdiction. And the question, then, that they say is you still should address preemption. And what I'm suggesting is if you look at these filed rate cases, what the Supreme Court has said in those cases is that because of the way the statutory scheme is set up, the jurisdictional question essentially answers...
You give us a to the language you're talking about in those cases.
Well, Your Honor, I...
One of those cases.
Sure. If I may, Your Honor, so the Entergy is 539 U.S. 39, and the point that I'd make from that case is that there's no actual determination that is required, and so if you would like to take a look at page 49 in the second paragraph just before subheading B, okay, that gets to that. But if I think Nantahala, which is 476... U.S. 953, that lays out the initial logic for the case as to why there is preemption in the case where there's a conflict between the cost allocation. Okay, I thank you, Your Honors, for your time.
Your time is well since passed, so
thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Okay, you have time available for rebuttal if you want it.
We suggest you respond to the intervener's arguments.
I think it's rather easy to respond to the intervener's argument because everything they said about how their output is measured was factually incorrect. The reason you don't see this argument below is because, as I've discussed, the wholesale energy netting period and also the netting period used to determine if that wholesale energy output is transmitted is 1 hour under the California Station Power Protocol. So what happens in that example he used where the generator was offline for 30 days and consumed these 30 units. On the last day, it generates 130 megawatts, and let's assume there are 131, let's say, and it's using one to serve its own load. That 130 megawatts, it sells, it gets a wholesale price for that energy, and it transmits that 130 megawatts. There is no netting over a monthly basis to determine output. And that's one of the major points we've made here, is that the retail energy netting period and the wholesale energy netting period are different. FERC couldn't make the argument about trapping because under the California ISO market, your output is measured hourly. So their whole reasoning is simply wrong. In fact, what's going on theoretically is that they're deemed not to have consumed any power, but yet they still get to sell their full output. Now, the California ISO, in all its complication, tries to address that through something called imbalances, but the reality of the situation is there is no trapping here because the outbound energy and the outbound transmission are netted hourly. They are not netted over the course of a month.
I'm puzzled at the use of the word trapping here, yeah, because in FERC's opinion, trapping is an entirely different concept than the one you're both using now.
Well, to me, trapping can only occur if you're
talking
apples.
Correct? Isn't that not correct? Yeah. Trapping usually relates to the fact that, or the proposition that utilities have put money for capacity, which they can't recover for. That's what the FERC usually uses trapping for.
Trapping usually.
Are you using it, or are you both using it in a different context?
I think we're using it a little different way than cost trapping. There, as I understand Mr. Parrish's argument, he's trying to make the argument that energy they should be permitted to sell, they're not being permitted to sell because it's being assumed to be used for station power, but the reality of the California market is that they are permitted to sell this energy because the energy is netted hourly. And if FERC, in any of its cases below involving California, had pointed out that, my gosh, the outbound transmission and the outbound energy are measured hourly while the inbound is measured monthly, well, then the fact that FERC approves of different accounting fictions would have been blatant. It would have been quite clear. Another thing also regarding FERC counsel, just to be clear, actually in California, the pricing interval is 10 minutes. The netting or settlement interval is 1 hour. The billing period has ranged from 1 month to 2 months, but he made a statement the counsel for the FERC also made this implication that injections into the grid are measured monthly. They are not. They are measured every hour by the ISO. And that's, again, one of our main points, is that had they tried to rely, the reason they haven't relied on their wholesale energy netting authority here is very obvious. If they had, it would have been an hour, and they wouldn't have achieved the result they wanted to achieve. Now, would we still be here if they said that period was an hour? Yes, if they said it preempted the state, we might have less of an aggrievement issue, but our objection is to the preemption, not to the period.
You would not make the same concession that the petitioners did in Niagara.
No, if it were an hour, if the state is inconsistent, the issue is preemption. It doesn't matter what period FERC uses, and the whole reason they didn't use their wholesale energy authority here is because that's 1 hour.
Well, what do you respond to the intervener's argument that you didn't actually make a preemption argument below? And I'm looking at your answer and motion to intervene, and I actually don't. I'm skimming suddenly for an argument that I hadn't heard before, but I don't actually see that argument there.
The preemption argument, I think the first time we really made it is at JA 253, where we question how FERC could claim that its transmission jurisdiction gives it the authority to usurp state jurisdiction. And then again, I think in our July 2006 pleading.
JA 253, where?
The paragraph in addition, the mere.
It doesn't use the term preemption, but it does speak to the provision of jurisdiction.
And I think part of the issue here is FERC kept telling us in these.
This doesn't make the, there's no inconsistency argument, the argument that you couldn't have FERC.
Well, that same pleading does discuss the fact that there are inconsistent netting periods for the transmission-related services. On page 257, we point out the fact that there are charges to station power loads that aren't engaged in permitted netting, even though they're on the station power protocol. And then in the July 6 answer, or the July 6 pleading, it really clarifies the rehearing. We do clearly get into the issues of the conflicting netting periods.
Where is that? What page?
JA 320, starts at JA 324, and primarily, I think around page 329, let's see. Around page, sorry.
That's all right, 330, yeah.
326.
Yeah, there we're making the point that FERC itself is recognizing sales to these station power loads, i.e. their sales of energy imbalance service and other transmission-related services are being sold to these loads on an hourly basis. And we're saying FERC is recognizing their sales going on to these loads on an hourly basis. It simply is refusing to let the state use whatever netting period it wants, even though FERC itself is using differing netting periods.
What stage of the proceedings is this, July 26?
This was after our rehearing petition.
It was after the rehearing petition?
Yes. There was what happened was there was a motion to lodge retail tariffs of SCE.
Is it before the final?
Before the rehearing. FERC addressed everything in a final rehearing order. That's all I have.
Okay. Thank you, counsel. Case is submitted.